This is Twit.
Bad news. According to The Verge, Apple's Magic Keyboard that I spent $350 for on the last iPad Pro 12.9-inch will not fit on the new iPad Pro 12.9-inch, which means I'm going to have to buy another to add insult to injury, $349 keyboard. Yeah. Let's see. It's a $2,399 plus $349. now we're up to about $2,748.
Almost the cost of an original Mac.
Add text. Yeah, I mean, add text.
Those displays are not cheap.
Has anybody tried the Combi from Logitech? I'm wondering if I should get that.
The keyboard?
Yeah, the Combi Touch keyboard. It's going to be out for the new...
Lori did.
Yeah, Lori loved it, remember? They say they're going to have it out for the new iPad Pro. It's more like a case. It's got a kickstand.
It's like a Surface.
Yeah, more than a Surface, because this whole thing is a case. So somebody said it gets pretty thick and heavy, it's a lot less expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has Alcantara like the Surface. Look at that. Oh.
Not Cheetos friendly, but it feels nice.
Maybe I will do that instead just to. Now, I want to get the.
You know you're going to get both, Leo. I mean, we've been watching the show.
Oh, stop it. No, you know what? I'm not thrilled about the. I'm not thrilled about the Magic keyboard, only because the keys, maybe because I eat over my iPad more than I do other things, but the keys get stuck a lot. Like my space bar works only half the time and stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah. I think I've just screwed it. That's me. I mean, I'm sure I've just screwed it up. Maybe I can clean it out. Yeah. It's not a butterfly, right? It's the newer keyboard, so it should be easily cleaned.
It's Magic.
It's Magic.
Yeah.
Magic.
I was having a conversation with Jason Snell about these things last night or the night before over Twitter, and he was making the point that it is super expensive, obviously, but none of the keyboards that he's tried so far, none of the integrated keyboard trackpads he's tried so far that work with the iPad are nearly as responsive. That Apple seems to have some sort of a secret sauce going that makes the Magic Keyboard trackpad much, much better than anything else out there. So, I mean, for $350, it should be perfect.
But yeah.
That is an advantage.
So Logitech has never offered it for the 12.9-inch iPad Pro, but they are going to for the new one, and it will be significantly less expensive. $200 for the 11-inch and $230 for the 12-inch. So that's a $130 savings.
Apple charges $100 for Magic. I mean,
yeah, Magic's $130 more expensive.
Yeah.
So I will be the guinea pig. It might be a little thick. I did have a Logitech case for an older iPad, and it was thick. It was heavy.
I'm getting the new Magic Keyboard. I like them a lot. It's one of my favorite.
You really like it.
Andy and I have the exact opposite taste in keyboards, which is why I love doing the show with them so much. Like the click, I can't use clickety clackety keyboards, and my joints are so messed up from jujitsu that anything that requires a lot of effort is just hard for me to type on. So like, if gravity can do all the work for me and there's like minimal movement, I'm super happy. So. I like the new MacBook keyboards. I think they're really great, but that Magic Keyboard on the iPad, for some reason, I could type on that thing forever.
Yeah. My pick of the week this week has to do with that, so I won't spoil it.
Okay.
But yeah, Renee's absolutely right. My attitude is that if I'm going to deal with a keyboard that's not terribly comfortable for me to use, I may as well save all of the weight and all the thickness and just use the on-screen keyboard. Whereas if I'm in a position where I think I'm going to be using a keyboard, I would actually even rather have an external keyboard that can be like even 10 times better than anything that would integrate with a lid.
I like this because it. In fact, if you could show this, the kickstand means you could watch it with a kickstand, with a keyboard attached, because the keyboard just attaches to the bottom of this. But you can also use the kickstand and the keyboard. You know, they're going to flip it around here in a second. There it is. Yeah. I think that's actually a good form factor. I kind of like that idea that the keyboard attaches. So I don't know.
That's one of the brilliant things about these tablets, and one of the many reasons why I wish that Apple had not bet on that wrong horse, in my opinion, and gone with a multi-touch on Macs. Because once you have a detachable screen, you can like with the iPad Pro. You can have it as a flat tablet that is the slimmest damn thing you ever want when you're just like watching movies or reading comics, or you can plug it into something that makes it into something more of a laptop that will actually sit on your lap, or you can make it into like a detached sort of system that's more of a desktop sort of thing. So when I'm at that table on the commuter rail train, it's like I've got my screen, I've got my keyboard where I want it, I've got my mouse where I want it. I'm getting the entire desktop effect, and I can choose which of these modes that I want to use depending on what accessory I use with it. So that's a really attractive thing, and I just wish you could do that with a Mac.
Well, I think I guess the question
for a second, because there was this whole.
Go ahead, Renee.
Okay, so there was this whole thing that there's this huge misconception when it comes to Apple Silicon, and I don't know why, because Apple does go to great pains to explain it. But the minute the M1 came out, people were like, I can't wait for the iPad to get Apple Silicon. And we're like, no, it's had Apple Silicon for 10 years.
Yeah, isn't that
and now
funny?
The iPad isn't has the hoot? M1.
Yeah.
And people are like, I can't wait for the iPhone to get M1. I'm like, no, it's M1 is A14. It's an A14. But it's given people this idea that the iPad can now miraculously run Mac OS software, that just because it's the M1.
Yeah, right.
And there's been a lot of people writing about Apple bringing either iPad OS to the Mac or Mac OS to the iPad. And I'm still hoping that we get Apple OS or Swift OS, which does exactly what Andy said. It's like a endpoint neutral, input method neutral. It's on all your Apple stuff. It knows what inputs are available. If you want to touch, you touch. If you have a keyboard, mouse, pencil, all these things, it just feels like we're getting everything from Swift ASI to Swift OS at some point from Apple.
That's so hard to do though, Renee, because, and this is why Microsoft had so much trouble with it in Windows 8, is the touch targets for a mouse-based OS, Mac OS, are too tiny for an iPad-based OS. And so I guess you could have a switch flip and suddenly the menus go away or something, but it's going to be very modal, and I think that that's not going to work. And this is the problem Microsoft has. They really had it with 8. They've solved it a little bit with Windows 10 because it goes into a tablet mode. And the small touch targets make Mac OS very difficult to use with touch,
I think. But once you start to integrate both of the experiences together, it doesn't have to be that you're using all of one or all of the other. So I know that when I've being able to use a mouse and a keyboard and then just touching the things that I want to touch is useful.
Yeah.
Not that I want to touch everything all the time. I don't want to sit there and, you know, try to use Final Cut with that, but I would love to be able to click on certain things or move things around. A lot of times for me, this gets back into my methodology of how I do build Keynote documents, is that I have to go to my iPad to draw it, but then I have to come back to the OS to actually finish the Keynote document because the iPad is too inefficient. It's too inefficient for me to just build a deck by itself on the Mac, in my opinion, and too inefficient to try to build the rest of the deck on the iPad. And I just want both of them to be merged. If I could just draw on that and then use the tools the way they were designed, because the touch interface, to your point, is very hard to use for a high definition placement and so on and so forth that you would need for a real dock.
What I was thinking about how to leverage the M1 chip in both machines is to come up with back to my Mac 3000, where instead of having a system where the traditional remote access, where you're basically live streaming the screen from a computer you have at home, what if it would still require you have your Mac Mini or your MacBook or whatever up and running back home, but because it has that shared, it could possibly use a shared code base because it's using exactly the same CPU. What if it was all it was doing was sending UI events back to your original Mac? The Mac sends back, here's what I want the UI to do, and now the iPad just does it instead of reproducing an image that's on the screen back home. It's actually drawing the interface as it goes. So it's not running the app natively necessarily, but maybe hunks of that code could run on the M1. And I wouldn't mind so much that if my mindset is in the mode of I just have this super 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 slim and portable Mac that can also do iPad things. I would, and if it would also help Apple to sell me a new Mac back at home, I would actually be very interested in that, because one of the things I was using the iPad for a lot was simply remote access back to my Mac and my Windows machines.
The Independent addressed this a little bit in their interview with Jaws and John Ternus. It's a good interview. Unfortunately, it's behind a paywall, so I read the 9 to 5 Mac summary of it, but. Both Jaws and Ternus address this by saying well, I'll give you Jaws's quote. There's two conflicting stories people like to tell about the iPad and the Mac. On the one hand, people say they're in conflict with each other, that somebody has to decide whether they want a Mac or they want an iPad. Or people say we're merging them into one, that there's this grand conspiracy we have to eliminate the two categories and make them one. And the reality is neither is true. We're really proud of the fact that we work really, really hard to create the best products in their respective categories. And Turnus Bakhtin said, yeah, each team is just saying, no, let's make the best iPad. Let's make the best Mac. And that maybe that is the answer. Maybe that's the bottom line. Can I be cynical about that, though? Yeah.
Like, because one of Apple's greatest strengths is that they've never been precious about their products. They never mistook them for their business. They were never the iPod company. They were never even the Mac company.
Right.
Where, like, Microsoft famously would not let go of Windows until it was in Ballmer's not dead hands. And they rode that into the ground. But Apple, like, they will skewer the iPod for the iPhone because they know that they'd rather do that than somebody else. And Phil Schiller has famously had, he has this doctrine where he says that it's the iPhone's job to push so hard against the iPad that we question the existence of the iPad. And then it's the iPad's job to improve, so we question the relevance of the Mac. And then the Mac has to fight back by doing things none of those can do and force them to get better. And Apple is almost like gladiatorial combat. They just want the iPhone and the iPad to fight. Sorry, the iPad and the Mac to fight. And we can pick the one we want for now. And one day they'll see which one sort of is winning, and it'll get to a point where one subsumes the other, or they both go on, or some third thing replaces them. But they're not their children. These are instantiations of what Apple wants to do.
Yeah, they're completely willing to let one beat the other.
Fight for mommy's love. We can't love you both.
Yeah.
Equally.
And it goes back and forth. Like, the iPad looked like it was killing, and then it went down, and the Mac was killing, and now they're sort of neck and neck. It's a race.
Yeah.